Welcome, everybody, to Horror Movie Yearbook. I am your host, Tim Long, and I am joined today by the knowledgeable, the astute, the profound, the ingenious, the sage.
Ooh.
Mr.
The sage himself. Willie Gibbs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't really have it, because, yeah.
I like that.
We didn't really have a nickname for you, but I kind of like the sage.
The sage. I like that.
Sage Stallone.
Yeah, yeah. Wonderful, wonderful gentleman in the horror industry.
That's right. He did the Grindhouse stuff.
He did. He started Grindhouse with Bob Mirosky.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How's
it going?
Cool.
How's it going, Willie? Doing all right?
I'm doing okay. I am almost a week into quitting smoking.
Oh, good. You got it on the podcast now.
Yeah.
So now you're held accountable.
Yep. I'm almost a week into quitting smoking. So, you know, it's touch and go. It's tough. Each day gets better. Each day gets a little easier. You know what weird like side effect I didn't expect? And watch like a doctor that listens to us like say like just so you know it's not good. watch that happen. But is that I'm sneezing a lot today. I think things are breaking up a bit. I think perhaps my sinuses are clearing up a little bit and kind of releasing some of this stuff. I could be totally wrong. Maybe I'm just a little allergic or something to the change in weather.
There's probably it's springtime. Spring is sprung.
But I've noticed that. Yeah, my nose is doing a lot of yeah. No,
it's not good that you're sneezing all the
time. No, that sucks. But you know, the benefits are gonna far outweigh the drawbacks.
I think so too.
A few sneezes here and there isn't gonna make me quitting. So,
good.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, and like I said, we've got it on the podcast now. So
it is documented now. Yeah. So if I screw it up here, then
you can't get out of it now.
Yep. Yeah.
Good.
Pretty excited about that. Otherwise, same old, same old.
Good.
So.
Yeah. Well, excellent. I'm glad I checked in on you. It's been like an hour since I've seen you last.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You never know. We're gonna jump right into it this week. We got a little bit of feedback. We asked on Facebook what your favorite horror movie was from the year of 2005, which, spoiler alert, we will be talking about later.
Yeah, that is the year we're covering tonight. Yeah, yeah, pretty excited about it too, I want to say.
We got two votes for the movie Doom. So... from one Mr. Nick Blavelt, and our Horror Movie Yearbook intern Greg Long also voted for Doom.
Yeah, that's great minds think alike.
Nick also voted for The Descent. The Descent, to be fair, was his first choice, and then he goes, oh, and also Doom.
Yeah.
Because you can't forget about Doom. Willie, what do you remember about Doom?
I saw Doom in the theater. I remember when Doom was like... When it was going to be when they were talking about the movie, it was like early internet days, and Tom Cruise was going to star in a Doom film.
Oh, you're right.
Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
He was going to play Doom Guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pretty excited about it back then. And like years passed, and I think, you know, that first Resident Evil movie came out, and a handful of video game movies before that, to varying degrees of non-success.
I was thinking of success, but then I'm like, what word are you searching for here?
Yeah, failure is the actual word. I failed at finding failure.
Except for the Mike Epps one.
Yeah, well, who could forget that gem?
Yeah.
And then Doom came out, and, you know, it was fun. Like, I had a good time with it in the theater. I remember thinking, like, this could have been, like, a much better movie. You know what I mean? Like, it could have been, a cooler, more horror-oriented movie than it wound up being.
Remember,
Doom's pretty scary.
Remember at Comic-Con, the big thing that year was they showed the first-person sequence?
Yes.
At Comic-Con?
Yeah.
I remember that.
The first-person sequence is kind of fun.
It is kind of fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
Rock's really fun in it, too.
Rock's having a good time. He's chewing some scenery. It's like early Rock.
It is early Rock.
Yeah. Before I think he found his footing.
Mm-hmm.
Not a role he'd take now, let's put it that way. Or he might. I don't know.
He might. He's doing a Rampage movie.
That's true. But he's the star of the Rampage movie.
The Doom movie would... go differently these
days. Yeah, he kind of plays like the second lead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, kind
I think
of.
He wanted. I think he wanted a role where he could chew it a little bit.
Yeah, have a little yellow crazy. He gets ridiculous by the end of it.
Yeah.
Of course, he started his career with Scorpion King, so you know, playing the Scorpion King, which is pretty ridiculous too. Most of that movie, he's a half CG, like half Rock, half Scorpion CG creation. Yeah.
It's the 15th anniversary.
Yeah.
Sure,
all right.
Of the
cool.
Scorpion King.
Yeah. Does not age well. But no, Doom's a lot of fun.
I watched that last year, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah. Well, enough about Doom and the Scorpion King. Never enough about Doom and the Scorpion King.
Nah.
We could probably talk about it for the entire
two
hours of the show, probably.
Absolutely.
We also got more feedback this time from Alistair of the Films of Every Color podcast. He says, it's a grower. Midwest Film Nerds podcast alumni Tim and Willie know their horror and their awful 80s pop music. Once again, yes, we do know that, but we also know our awful pop music from the 90s.
Yeah, and who's saying awful?
Yeah.
Because I'm loving it.
The 70s were okay on. The 70s I would not put our knowledge of pop music.
No. I would say that's our weakest point so far.
Yep. And show no fear when it comes to dropping knowledge about every scary subject, from the weird universe of John Carpenter to the works and adaptations of Stephen King to the sexy realm of Clive Barker.
Ooh, that sexy realm.
Come for the horror recommendations, stay for the banter, and soak in the gore from two esteemed horror scholars. Great job on the podcast, guys. Each new episode gets better and better. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks. That's
awesome.
Hopefully
we can keep living up to that. Hopefully they can just get better and better until this is the best podcast that's ever happened.
The best that's
other
ever existed.
Like, other than S-Town or whatever. It's sweeping the nation right now.
What's that?
I don't know. It's everybody's listening to S-Town.
I don't know what that is.
I think it's one of those like Serial type podcasts.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can't get into those. But hey, go nuts.
Yeah, people love
it. Yeah, if it's success, hey, good for you guys, whoever's behind it.
Yeah, ours is better.
Yeah. if we can beat Austin... Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Stone Cold Steve Austin podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. if we can trump him just once, that'd be nice.
That would be, yep. Let's aim for that.
He's the king of podcasting.
So. He has not done any horror movies, unfortunately.
No, I wonder if he likes horror movies. What do you think? You think still Steve Austin likes horror movies?
I think if it's action horror, maybe. But I think Steve's a straight up Western action guy.
Like Steve might like Doom.
I think he'd... Yeah, maybe. I know I said horror action, but now I'm thinking about it. I think he would not like Doom.
Okay.
Because I think he'd be like, this is stupid.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's probably
He's
more,
like, I'm
yeah.
dizzy.
He likes Westerns.
He wants the Duke.
He likes Die Hard, I'm sure.
Yeah. All right, Willie, are you ready?
Are we traveling back? Are we going in the time machine right now?
We're going all the way back.
Oh, man.
We're going back 12 years. Give me a sound effect. Give me a time machine noise. That was like the NBC chimes.
Oh, it was. That's totally unintentional.
We're in the time machine. We're in 2005. Willie.
Yes.
What were you doing in 2005? Do you remember?
I was in... Oh, man. Wait a second. This was my first year of college. So I went to community college in 2005. Or the fall of 2004, I should say. And, yeah, I don't know. I took my basic stuff. I went to a local OCC, Oakland Community College. I took my basic stuff. Had to take all your prereqs, which most of which you kind of already took in high school. But, you know, they got to get their money. So did that. And, God, what else is going on? I think I had my first real tragic breakup in 2005.
Oh, that's a bummer. Yeah. Even worse than that. Didn't you tell a breakup story on here once when you were in, like, middle school or elementary?
I talked about that. This is a different one.
Right, you know?
Yeah. This one was an actual relationship.
Oh, okay.
Like, a real one.
Did they break up with you in a note?
Nope.
Like
nope.
A cootie catcher?
No. It was a legit, like face-to-face. I think I believe it was face-to-face breakup. But that was my first big one. That was my first, I'd say, like, serious relationship that there was a breakup. It's very sad. You know, got over it pretty quick, though, you know? You have to go through that, you know.
Yeah,
I think everybody has to go through that first bad one, you know, because then you're like, you become a stronger person.
You gotta be bad. You gotta be bold.
Exactly.
You gotta be stronger.
Exactly. So that happened. Gosh, what else? I think that. I mean, those are probably the bigger events. First year of college, first big breakup. You know.
Yeah. Those are big events.
A couple life defining, you know, moments.
That's good.
Yeah.
I turned 21.
Another life-defining
moment. 2005. Yeah, it was.
How'd you handle it?
Like, I look back sometimes, and like, if someone, and I don't know who would ever ask me this, but they're like, "Hey, do you have any advice for someone that's like in their 20s?"
Okay.
And I just be like, "Don't do like what I did."
Okay.
Like at all, because like I turned 21. It was a disaster.
I feel like you'd just like touch your hands to the side of their head, and you'd give them like flashes of. You at 21.
I was still living in Gaylord in northern Michigan at the time. I believe I was on my final year of community college.
Okay.
I went to college for a total of 6 years. I'm actually a doctor in my spare time. So.
Oh.
Yeah, it's nice. That's
cool. Yeah, I think I went to school for like 8, so.
Yeah, two esteemed doctors here. Buddy is schooled. So I went turned 21. Went to Big Buck Brewery and Steakhouse, which there was one actually in Detroit for a while, but it closed down.
There was. That's now a Foaling
place, yeah. Yep. Went there, and I got a ride in a limo there.
Oh.
And I thought, whoa, like, because my parents are, I'm like, they sprung for a limo. It turns out it was a free limo service that Big Buck was offering because it was like their 10th anniversary.
But you felt pretty cool.
But it was still pretty cool. Yeah. I was happy my parents like hooked it up. So went in the limo, went to Big Buck, had a couple drinks. The Pistons were in the playoffs. I think they were playing the Heat at the time. Mm. This is when the Pistons were like in the finals.
Yeah, this was too. This was good. When did they win?
The year before.
It was 04.
Yeah, this is the year they lost to the Spurs. Another story, another time. I won't get into what happened that night. There are people that know me, though, that know what happened that night, and it ain't pretty, and I can't bring it up on the podcast.
Whoa.
But so I went to the Tyrolean, is what it's called, for my 21st birthday, and I had a shot, and I remember the shot because it led to something else, but it was called a Prairie Fire. You ever had a Prairie Fire?
No, heard of it.
Prairie Fire is tequila and Tabasco sauce.
Yep.
Horrible, horrible combination. There are two drinks that you get, you buy someone on their 21st birthday if you want them to. Throw up, basically.
Mm.
One of them is this, and the other is the cement mixer. I couldn't even tell you what's in a cement mixer. I did not have that. I told him, don't give me that.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
I go, I'll do a Prairie Fire. I think I can get away with that. And I felt really good after the first one.
Yeah.
So someone bought me another one. And I did this thing, and I thought I nailed it. Like, I just took the tequila, and the Tabasco sat in the bottom. Like, good to go. Didn't mess with me. Like, 10 minutes later, like, I was in the Tyrolean coat room. And I was throwing up all over the coat room.
Oh, no.
I did not get it on anybody's coats.
That's good.
But what happened was I started wandering, and I don't think my friend stopped me or they lost me. And I started wandering, and I go, oh, look at this. There's a door. This is obviously the bathroom.
Uh-huh.
So I went, and I went in there and did not realize the coats. And I apparently thought the floor was the bathroom.
Oh,
and
man.
I threw up all over.
This is a story you're willing to tell. I can't even imagine what
the
other one is.
The other one's not good. But I don't think I got it on anybody's coat.
That's good. No, that's nice that you didn't like damage anybody's personal property.
Right.
You know, you made a little bit of a mess, but so what?
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. These are not this is not a proud story, but I feel like I have to get it off my chest.
No, it's important.
Because I want people to learn. Like, if you're, like, an 18-year-old, mm-hmm. or maybe you're in high school right now, and you're like, can't wait to be 21. Like, I'm going to go out and start doing some Prairie Fires.
Yep.
Don't do it.
It's a bad call. Once we get to what, like 07, I can talk about my 21st.
Good.
So I'll make you feel a little better.
Good. So if you have any, 21st birthday stories, or if maybe you're just like, hey, Tim, don't tell any more stories about you throwing up all over people's property. Mm. Please feel free to write in.
It was scary. It's a scary story.
Or movieyearbook@gmail.com.
Yeah.
I forgot to give out the things. Whatever. We'll give it out at the end.
Yeah.
So we're in 2005. I have, just turned 21.
Mm-hmm.
Willie has just broken up.
Oh.
We won't get into that. I've already made you relive the Devil's Rejects today.
That's true. You did the
George W. Bush starts his second term as 43rd President of the United States.
Dubs.
This is the year of Hurricane Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
Not good there. The video sharing website YouTube was founded. Tony Blair, for our friends across the pond, was elected for his third.
There was a time before YouTube.
Yeah.
Pretty weird to think about now, though, right? I mean, like, I lived during plenty of it, so did you.
Yes.
But I like, can't remember a time before YouTube existed. Like, I
remember literally it was a lot of, like, QuickTime.
Yeah, that's true.
A lot of, like, QuickTime
videos.
That's true.
Yeah, you just sit there wait for it to load.
Yeah. You had to watch it go slowly crawl across the bottom.
Sometimes you get impatient.
You do that with YouTube.
You'd play it, and then, like, you'd watch, like, 10 seconds, and you'd stop. And then you'd let it load, and then you'd play it, and yeah.
I did that all the time, yeah. Yeah, Tony Blair elected for the third term. Tony Blair, of course, played by Hugh Grant in Love Actually. No.
Played by Michael Sheen.
In
A Special Relationship.
In A Special Relationship.
Not part of the Clive Barker realm of sex.
No. Another one, The Marriage of the Prince of Wales and Camilla Parker Bowles takes place. Congratulations, guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Two kids.
Yep.
Making it legal. Lance Armstrong wins a record 7 straight Tour de France before his scheduled retirement. This one, Lance Armstrong was a national hero.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know. We're in the time machine. We don't know what a debacle he would turn out to
be. He had one of the great twists in sports history. Because the thing is, not only did we find out he was a fraud.
Yeah.
But he like owned it. And he was like, yeah, I'm a bad person. Like, so what? I tricked you.
It's weird. That sport is filthy. Like, it's worse than boxing when it comes to stuff like that.
Which is pretty incredible because, like, the filthiness of boxing killed boxing.
Yeah. Dennis Rader, the BTK serial killer is charged with 10 counts of murder in Wichita, Kansas. The BTK killer was made into a movie we used to carry at the video store.
Plenty of direct-to-video BTK movies, I think. Yeah.
And then following 8 years of legal wrangling in the courts, Terry Schiavo. Remember Terry Schiavo's feeding tube is removed and she dies 13 days later.
Yeah, I do remember Terry Schiavo.
So 2005, it's not like some of those years, like 1976, where you're like, holy crap, the world's going to end.
No. Here.
It's just kind of shitty.
It's not an up year, though.
No, it's, no, these are kind of like, for the most part, these are bad stories. Like, really, just the YouTube.
Kind of sad, yeah.
And YouTube is only good because you get the, it's like you get funniest home videos on demand.
Yeah, yeah, cat videos started to pop up to kind of like make up for the Terry Schiavo situation and stuff like that, you know, to try and make you feel like there was some some things to look forward to.
That was a nice balance to the universe.
Yeah. No, I mean, like you know, the headlines were sad, but at least we were getting an influx of cat videos.
Yeah. You want the top 10 movies of that year?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Madagascar, which I think they're probably still making those. Or at least the penguins of them. Batman Begins was only number 8. I thought it was higher.
Oh.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the Tim Burton one. Wedding Crashers, which was a phenomenon. Number 5, the Peter Jackson King Kong, which I did not know made that much money. Number 4, another one I didn't know made that much money, was War of the Worlds. This must be worldwide box office, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it has to be. Yeah.
Number 3, Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. My favorite Harry Potter.
My favorite Harry Potter as well.
Number 2, The Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe. Yeah, this is definitely over. This is definitely worldwide, I think. And number 1, you got to guess, 2005?
I have no idea.
It's a part of a long-running franchise. They're still making them today.
Is it Casino Royale?
Nope.
Is that 05?
I'll give you a hint. No!
Oh, is it Revenge of the Sith?
Yeah.
I saw every single movie you just listed in the theater.
Narnia?
Yes.
The only thing I remember about Narnia is the SNL skit, Lazy Sunday.
Oh, God, it's so good.
That was a huge draw this time. You know what, though? Other than that? No, I didn't see Madagascar in the theater.
Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. No, I didn't see Madagascar. I didn't see... No, I don't think I saw Mr. and Mrs. Smith. So the bottom two I didn't see, but everything else, the top 8 I saw.
Cool.
So I'm a liar, basically, is what I'm saying. Yeah, that's the quitting right. Smoking thing has turned me into a liar, apparently. I just make things up.
You got to have a new addiction.
Yeah.
Top 10 songs. Number 10, Kelly Clarkson, Behind These Hazel Eyes.
Oh, good one.
Yep. Number 9, Pussycat Dolls featuring Busta Rhymes, Don't Ya.
Don't Ya, Wish Ya. Mm-hmm. They still play that at like every sporting event, don't they?
I think so.
When the cheerleaders come out?
Yeah.
Yeah. They do.
I know. I just, right? It just clicked.
Okay. So I was going to say, like, they really do, though, right?
What a mean
like,
thing to play.
It kind of is, right? Cause, yeah, because, like, yeah, that's not
yeah.
Nice.
Number 8, 50 Cent. Featuring Olivia in the candy shop. Take you to the candy shop.
50 Cent's really funny because he got really lazy really quick
he
with
did.
His music.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he that birthday came out, right? Mm-hmm. Or whatever the song's called.
Go
Shorty. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it, like, people were like, oh my God,
yeah.
This man is the new.
Well, he's on like Dr. Dre's label too.
Yeah, so. It was a big deal. And then like the next 4 or 5 singles were all the same song.
Mm-hmm.
And he would just substitute his penis for something else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
But then he stopped doing that. And
yeah.
Then he started acting. And the problem with 50 Cent is it's hard to understand him in his raps, and it's even harder like in a movie. Like he's a mumble talker.
Yeah, he's not terribly you know,
I laugh when I see him in movies because I'm like, I can't understand what 50's saying.
What's going on, 50?
Number 7, Green Day, Boulevard of Broken Dreams. I had that album. That was American Idiot. And at the time I'm like, yeah. American Idiot. I listened to that a lot, and then like now I can't tolerate most of those songs on that album.
I can listen to like the first 2 Green Day albums.
Yeah,
and that's
I think
about
I'm with
it.
You. I think
yeah.
I'm with you because yeah. Dookie is still really fun.
Basically, I feel the exact same way about Green Day as I do about The Offspring. I'm like,
okay.
First 2 albums were good to go.
Yeah.
After that,
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That was, yeah. I was listening to that and a lot of because this is Queens of the Stone Age, Lullaby
oh.
Paralyzed. This isn't Songs for the Dead.
Little yeah. Sister was on Lullaby
yeah.
Paralyzed. That
yes.
was the first single.
It was a follow-up because the bassist left after that.
Uh-huh.
And I remember people were kind of down on it. I listened to it not too long ago. I'm like, this is awesome.
Both those albums are amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, really everything before that is pretty damn good, too. But I mean, Songs
yes.
for the Deaf is their best album.
Yeah.
I think that's hard to argue.
Songs for the Deaf is like one of my favorite albums.
It is one of, yeah. It, mm-hmm. Like, literally, I can listen to it all the way through, and I'm never for a second bored.
Yep.
Yeah, Lullabies is a pretty solid follow-up, though.
Yep. Kanye West featuring Jamie Foxx, Gold Digger.
Oh, I love that song.
I do too.
If it comes on, I'm still like, yeah.
Sierra featuring Miss C. Elliott, 1-2 Step. I like that song, too.
Yeah, that's all right.
Kelly Clarkson showing up again since you've been gone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mario, Let Me Love You. I'm not familiar with that one as much.
Isn't that the one, the oh, God.
Love you,
and I will love you.
Yeah. Mario from Super Mario.
Yeah, that was all right.
Gwen Stefani, Holla Back Girl.
Who doesn't like Holla Back Girl? Honestly, that's the Gwen Stefani hip-hop experiment is one of the most interesting things that's ever happened.
Yeah, because she pulled a lot from like Japanese culture and hip-hop into a thing.
Which is pretty cool. Like, in concept, it's kind of neat. Like, good for you, Gwen. Mm-hmm. But
Gwen Stefani's voice could be very annoying to me. And it reminds me, like, there are times when I can't tell the difference between her and the lead singer of Rush.
And, oh, my God.
Drive me.
Geddy Lee and Gwen Stefani.
Geddy Lee and Gwen Stefani. If you switch them in their songs in their respective bands, I could not tell you
that's
the
amazing. I once again, much like Green Day and Offspring, the first No Doubt album or two are pretty solid. Mm-hmm. After that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Number one song in the history of 2005.
Well, if it's not Bananas, I don't know.
Is Mariah Carey, We Belong Together.
Okay.
Yeah. I got no opinion on that.
Yeah.
I've got no opinion really on Mariah.
No, I don't. I don't. Yeah.
She was funny this year, in the future, mm-hmm. 2017, when she rang in the new year.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yep. All right. You ready to get to our first movie?
I am. Yeah. Let's do it.
We've done enough. There.
Enough about these pop stars.
Yeah. Let's get to some. Let's go to the dark side.
Mm.
Much like Anakin.
Ooh, yes. We will not be talking about Revenge of the Sith.
No.
No worries there.
No, at least it's not Attack of the Clones.
Oh, God.
Neil Marshall's The Descent, our second Neil Marshall movie.
Oh, my God, yeah.
We did Dog Soldiers a couple years back, 2002.
And unfortunately, probably our last Neil Marshall movie.
I think so, unless we could somehow work in Doomsday.
Which I know you'd love to.
I would
but
love to, yeah.
You might have to argue that one with me a little bit.
The caving expedition goes horribly wrong as the explorers become trapped and ultimately pursued by a strange breed of predators. I saw this movie when it came out on video, probably in 2006 for the first time. This is, I think, the second or third time I've seen it. Probably the third time, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Been a while, Willie. What did you think about The Descent?
This is one of the best horror movies of all time.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
In my opinion. it's kind of everything I like. Like, it's, God, I don't even know where to start. I mean, here's what's amazing about The Descent. Let's just kick it off with this. It is the opposite of Dog Soldiers. Like, in a cool way, though. You know, like, you've got there was one actress in Dog Soldiers, but she's kind of an afterthought. So I mostly consider it, like, it's pretty much an all-male cast. This is an all-female cast with, like, one kind of afterthought male. I mean, an important character, but one that's not really central, you know, to what's going on in the actual movie, the husband. But it's almost like the exact opposite, and, like, it's totally on purpose, and it's totally awesome. I love it. And, like, this... God. This is, like, everything Joss Whedon's ever wanted to create. Like this is, like... You've got a cast of female characters. They all feel like real, relatable human beings, with the exception of maybe one. But she feels real. She just doesn't necessarily feel relatable. And I'm talking about Juno.
Are you talking about Juno?
Juno's tough to relate to.
Dude, Juno's tough to relate to. Juno's also my favorite character.
She's fantastic. She feels like a real person.
I think she's one of the great horror characters.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they're thrown into this situation. They're up against insurmountable odds, which include claustrophobia, drowning, falling into ridiculously large chasms and, you know, dropping to your doom, and then cannibalistic monster creature things that mm-hmm. climb around, like evil golem monsters. That's the thing is, like, the tension builds so well in this movie that you almost forget for a while that you're going to see monsters at some point in the movie. Like, because you're so into the emotional drama that's going on with the lead character and the death of her family and kind of what's going on with, you know, we know going into this that there was something going on with Juno and the husband. We know that. It's pretty telegraphed to the audience on purpose. There's tensions there with the entire group. There's a sense of trying to that always awkward moment of like trying to make a friend feel better about a loss or about something, like trying your hardest and maybe making it even worse, you know, like there's so much tension going on, interpersonal tension with the characters. And then you add like that they're going cave diving, which is dangerous. There are a lot of pitfalls, you know, actual pitfalls and metaphorical pitfalls that can come along with it. I'm terrified of enclosed spaces. That's something I just don't like. That's not necessarily true. It's not even enclosed spaces. I'm terrified of the idea of getting stuck.
Yeah.
I remember as a kid being kind of spooked by those like McDonald's and like Caesarland tunnels
and stuff. Yeah. Because
I was always like, what if you got stuck in one of those tunnels? Like that'd be the scariest thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a scene in this movie that really plays on that fear and really, really it messes with you. But it covers everything. I mean, there's, you know, if you're afraid of the dark, you're going to be freaked out by this movie. If you're afraid of, like I said, enclosed spaces, you're going to be freaked out by this movie. If you're afraid of the idea of being stalked or the idea of something following you around and not knowing what's over your shoulder, you're going to be freaked out by this movie. Like, there's not a whole lot that it doesn't cover, but it all feels natural. It all feels like it all feels like it's naturally part of the story and it's not being forced upon you. Like, hey, we have to hit this beat and this beat and this beat. It all feels organic. And I love that. In terms of just the filmmaking, it's brilliant. Like, Neil Marshall chooses to use only actual things on set to light the set.
Mm-hmm.
Helmet lamps, video cameras, whatever the women would have on them, he uses to. And this is not only cool in terms of playing up the realism of them being in the cave, but it also works in terms of reminding you which character is which on occasion, because it gets dark and it can be kind of, you forget who you're with there for a second every once in a while. But like, if you notice, there's one character that has a video camera as her source of light. So anytime you see the video camera, you know you're with that character. There's another one that has a flare, so you know, I think Juno has the flares.
Yep.
So anytime there's like that red lighting, you know you're back with Juno right away. It's just kind of cool. It's smart. It's fantastic, top to bottom. I don't know. What do you think, Tim? What do you think about The Descent? I could keep rambling on, but
no, it's no. I feel like we as a movie going community, a horror movie fan, I feel like we let Neil Marshall down.
Uh-huh.
I feel as if we did not appreciate him while we had him, and now he has gone on to just make TV, it seems like, lately.
Great TV.
And that's the thing. Maybe he really likes doing TV, and he's also really good at it from what I hear. I don't watch Game of Thrones, but I'm sure it's fantastic.
He did some of the better episodes.
Yeah. But Neil Marshall is awesome, and this is only his second feature-length movie. And what's interesting about all three of the movies that we're going to talk about tonight, it's everybody's second movie, which I think is kind of cool.
And it's
three directors that I think, for the most part, are still working. I mean, Zombie and Scott Derrickson definitely are, but Neil Marshall is too.
And what I think is interesting about all three being all their second movies is I think they all avoid the sophomore slump.
Yeah.
I think they all actually improve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. Dog Soldiers is a good debut.
Mm-hmm.
And at times it's pretty great. I think this is probably his best movie.
Yeah.
I think it's a great blend of suspense, horror, action. I will say I think the first half of the movie works a little bit better for me than when the monsters show up.
Okay.
I'm with you. I find it creepier and more unsettling when we're in enclosed spaces,
mm-hmm,
than maybe necessarily just going up against monsters.
Sure.
But it's not like the monster parts are bad.
Yeah.
If you're going to have monsters, you put monsters in the movie. It's never a bad thing to put monsters in your movie, no matter what movie you're making.
And they're well-designed monsters.
They are cool.
They're well thought out. I mean, they feel like you can, if you stretch your imagination a little bit, you're like, I could believe that there are cave systems down below where maybe something like that could exist.
Yes. I wanted to touch on that too, because that's actually my two favorite parts of the movie are the characters. And I love that the second half of the movie doesn't lose sight of the characters. And a lot like Tremors, it's a lot of character through action too.
Yeah.
It's not a lot of talking about what they've done in the past. You know what they're doing, and the way they act, is how they are.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing I love about it is there is not much of a backstory to the creatures.
Yeah.
And I love that because I feel like there's like one line in this movie where they goes, it looks like someone was here like a long time ago or something.
There's a bit where they find some mining equipment.
Yes.
And they're like, they say something like, no, people haven't used this stuff in...
in forever.
Ages. Which could mean a couple things, you know.
Yes. Yeah. So I love that because I think it's easy to get tied up in stuff that probably could be left for like a tie-in graphic novel.
Yeah.
The backstory of the monsters. And I think a lot of movies in the modern era get kind of tied up in that, mm-hmm. and this doesn't. Like, these are just, they're monsters in a cave.
Yeah.
Like, this, it's kind of how Tremors was, too, in a way, is like, these are just things that exist and they're trying to kill our
yep.
main characters. So, I love that. At the end of the, I'm curious why these monsters exist, but...
What's your thought on it? Do you have a theory about what they are, or what they... Did you ever really think that much into it, or no?
I guess I've never really thought too much into it. I assumed they were much like the group. They were a team of cave divers that went down there a long time ago.
Yeah.
And they were one of the first to discover it, and they got sucked in by whatever forces are down there and changed throughout.
Yeah.
Throughout time, so.
Yeah, my thought was always that these are essentially prehistoric people that have been down there undiscovered for that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, they've been down there for a long time. Somebody mentions that they've evolved to... These creatures are perfectly adapted to survive. And
exactly, yeah.
Yeah. So I always got the vibe that these were people at some point, or some version of people. You know what I mean?
But something's kept them alive down there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is, I'm curious why they exist, but I can make it up in my own head, and it's not really that important to... the themes of the story or the characters, really. Mm. I mean, this is what they're going through. That's it. I like the second half of... I like the characters. I like... It feels like a response to Dog Soldiers, like I think you said.
It does.
But you're right. It's not heavy-handed. They're still human. They're not, like, hardcore... They're not, like... I think like Kate Beckinsale in Underworld.
No. Or like Emilia Jovovich in a Resident Evil.
Yeah, where it almost feels like in a way they're kind of overcompensating.
Mm-hmm.
But they're aggressive and they're doing what they need to do to survive.
Well, they're thrill seekers. I think they set that up very early on. It's a group of women who have bonded over their mutual love of thrill seeking, of cave diving or rafting or bungee jumping, you know, like that's what they're into.
Right.
And so naturally, a person who's drawn to that kind of, I feel like who's drawn to that kind of thing would be a little more maybe aggressive or willing to adapt to danger, you know?
Yeah.
So.
No, I agree. And I don't think necessarily characters like Resident Evil, like Mila Jovovich, and I don't think that's a bad thing for the movies they're in, but I think for this movie, for the stories it's trying to tell, these people need to be human, and I think the monsters actually play off them really well, and they highlight a lot of the issues, the interpersonal issues that the women have between each other, particularly Juno and Sarah,
mm-hmm.
just the kind of the emotional betrayal and desertion and stuff, and I mean the courage in the face of danger mm-hmm. constantly. I think it's nice, and I think the monsters, they serve their purpose thematically, and they are cool because
mm-hmm.
they're monsters that have been down there. Yeah, I think this is a great movie.
Did you have you seen both endings? About like 28 Days Later.
I didn't watch it this time. What is the other ending to this one?
There's one where she essentially gets out of the cave and she drives off, and there's like a jump scare at the end kind of thing.
Okay.
And then there's the other one where she hallucinates getting out of the cave and then winds up hallucinating her daughter in front of her and with her birthday cake. And that's kind of how the movie ends.
Okay.
I don't know which one you saw, but probably the birthday cake one, right?
Yeah. That's the
original ending. And that's the better ending, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, I've heard Neil Marshall talk about this, and the studio said they wanted more of an up ending. They wanted, you know, they wanted her to escape and get away. And he's like... He made a really, really valid argument where he's like, "That's not the more up ending.
Yeah,
what kind of life does she have after that? All of her friends are dead.
Mm-hmm.
Her family's already dead. Nothing. She's got nothing. She's traumatized. She's a basket case, and she's got nobody. I'm like, she's. And he said, you know, like the more up ending is her finding, you know, solace and inner peace with the idea of her daughter." Before she gets killed, you know, like that's, and that's, he's not wrong.
That's kind of the entire it's kind of what the movie is leading towards the entire time.
So to cheat people out of that is kind of sad.
Yeah.
I get it. Like, I understand that the studio mentality of it, it just doesn't work. The ending with the birthday cake and her with the daughter is much better.
I think, I think I've seen the other one because I got it confused in my head, but that's the one I watched this time. So
okay, that's the one I think that's on the DVD and the Blu-ray.
So, yeah.
And God, I was going to mention something else. I don't remember. Oh, what about the theory? I've heard this theory a lot online and through various sources that Sarah is killing off her friends and that the creatures are hallucination. Doesn't work for me.
Doesn't work for me either.
It actually doesn't make any sense when you watch the movie, but it's kind of a cool idea.
Has Neil Marshall ever commented on that, do you know?
Yeah, he said whatever you like to interpret. Yeah.
So that's a.
He goes with I think that's how he subscribes to is that in his mind, I think, yeah, there's creatures, but if that's what you take from it and you enjoy that interpretation of it, fine, go nuts.
Yeah, people can interpret movies the way they want to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm good with that. I've never
No.
that at all.
I mean, she's nuts by the end.
I don't remember even, because normally a movie, on like a second or third time, that tip would reveal itself, that tip of the hand, and I have never even...
There's moments in this movie that would completely contradict that, unless the entire movie is in her crazed mindset.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, there's moments where we're seeing creatures attack people in front of other people. You know what I mean? With her, it just doesn't make sense. But I think it's a neat idea that maybe she went crazy and
this is all.
She starts picking them off one by one.
Yeah.
It's a neat concept. It just doesn't really work for me.
It doesn't work for me either, especially the Juno stuff.
Yeah.
Because Juno kills somebody in this movie too.
Yeah.
So. Doesn't the sequel follow Juno?
Kind of.
We haven't seen.
We'll talk about that for a couple minutes. I think the sequel. I want to very briefly.
Refresh my memory on it when we get to it.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll mention that at the very end. One thing I want to say is, I love that this entire movie takes place in a big womb.
Yeah, I know.
It's fucking awesome.
Yeah, it is.
There
awesome.
Is a bit where. And it's probably going to sound gross, but it is gross, where she falls into, like, this river of blood.
Yeah.
And it's kind of got, like, this disgusting, chunky, like, overlay. And it looks like afterbirth. Like, it looks like a placenta, and she's covered in it. And, like, it's totally done on purpose. and that's the moment when she's, like...
That's what they use on the poster, isn't it?
Yeah. And then that she offs, in that moment, she kills the only female crawler you see in the entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
The one with the long hair.
Yeah.
She kills the female crawler, and that moment, that's when she changes. Like, you can see it in her eyes. That's where she's like a warrior now.
Yeah.
Like
she takes control.
Right. To the point where she's now become more badass than Juno, who is clearly the alpha female up to that point. You know, she's the one that can really handle herself. But even when Juno sees Sarah next, she's like taken aback, like, whoa.
Yeah.
Holy shit. and I love that idea that, like, I do like the image of her crawling out of the cave because it's like she's being reborn.
Yep.
Like she's coming out of the womb a completely different, you know. I dig that.
It's like the Bourne Identity ending. Like when he comes out of the water.
Yeah, I've never seen the Bourne Identity.
Oh, spoiler. He swims out of the water.
That's okay. That's right. I've never seen any of the Bourne. I saw the Jeremy Renner one.
Yeah, that's right.
Isn't that sad? God.
That's so funny.
It's a good thing this is horror movie yearbook
right?
And not like
yearbook?
Yeah, not just movie yearbook. But no, I love that. I love what Neil Marshall's doing there. Mm-hmm. It's cool to see, in my opinion, a male director who can kind of tap into themes that are very female. That I still find interesting by all means. I mean,
right.
I think they're very very.
Well, to be fair, women are way more interesting than men.
Oh, absolutely.
Men are pretty much.
Yeah, we're pretty straightforward.
Binary.
We're very much dog soldiers.
Yes.
I mean, if anything, if you want a good portrait at
male and female,
men are from Mars, women are from Venus, just watch Dog Soldiers and then Descent, and you'll see kind of our mentalities about pretty much everything in life.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, some people are better than others at hiding it.
Sure, sure. But inside of all of our hearts, we have little dog soldiers. No, it just, it's, it, this movie's amazing. It really is. And it deserves to be rewatched. The sequel, do you want to talk about that first?
One more thing, quick.
Yep.
Because I always like to try to figure out put it in place in the context of 2005.
Of course, yeah.
I think it's an interesting story about a person dealing with a personal tragedy and finding some closure. Mm-hmm. I think that's an interesting theme to play around with in a post-9/11 world.
Yeah, and yeah, I think
I know it's, yeah.
If you look at the headlines that you read off, there is a lot of stuff going on that's, you know, I think you've got to think about not just 9/11.
No, I know, yep.
And the loss there, but the fact that we are now very much embroiled in a conflict in the Middle East at this
yes.
point. And people's kids are going overseas, and
yep.
a lot of them are coming back. And not only that, but we're witnessing and hopefully to a certain degree we're feeling sympathetic for lives that are lost on the other side of the conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, in a war situation, there are people on both sides that are
right.
innocent people that shouldn't be. You know,
and I think because we're American, like 9/11 is our kind of like, oh, the world changed then.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what it is for her in the beginning of the movie. Like, oh, her entire world is
it's
changed.
It's gone.
Yep.
Yeah, it's completely destroyed.
I forgot how he died in this movie.
Yeah, it's brutal.
Yeah.
It's brutal. I'm glad they didn't have
that. That was the one part my girlfriend, Amy, it was the one part she watched. Like, she was coming out of the bathroom or something, or like out of the laundry room.
Right.
And like, I just started watching it, and she's like, I'm going
to
go upstairs. And then she glanced at the TV, and the pole went through the car. And she's like, oh, my God.
I'm glad he had the good taste not to show the daughter.
Right.
Killed. Cause, I mean, you could see the other pole going in there, so you know what happened.
Yep.
But, yeah, I'm glad he didn't. I think other directors we're going to talk about soon here probably would have shown the whole thing.
I would assume, and then the pole would have called him like a fuck.
yeah, exactly.
All right, talk about the sequel real quick.
Yeah, Descent Part 2. So Neil Marshall wasn't involved in this one, which is too bad because I think he would have been interested in at least helping out with this.
I was going to say, I think he was a producer, but it's like a producer because of the characters.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, he didn't actually do anything. The idea is that basically they follow neither of the two endings, neither of the two endings, and they just have Sarah straight up come out of the cave and get picked up by authorities, and she has amnesia, so she doesn't remember anything that happened in the cave, very conveniently.
Mm-hmm.
And so the local authorities decide that, like, we're going to go back in and try and look for these women that went missing, and they bring Sarah with them. It's very much the Aliens, you know,
okay.
like, bring her back to the source of the... And they get back in the cave, and she starts remembering things, and it turns out Juno's still alive. She's been down there surviving for a long time, which is ridiculous. And...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Basically, the movie ends the same way this one does. Like, everybody dies,
yeah.
including Juno and Sarah. And you sit there and you wonder, oh, well, then what was the point?
I want to say I've seen it, but it was like I thought it was crappy, so I forgot it.
There are occasional neat moments. I do like when a sequel revisits the location of an original and then is able to play on the audience's memories of the first movie. There's a bit where they have to cross a chasm, and her friend Sam's body is still hanging. What's left of the body.
That's cool.
So they're able to swing across using the body. So like, there's a continuity
that's
there.
Funny. Yeah.
There's a continuity there that's kind of cool, but it's just not very good. And it's very much a lesser. It's the Descent Light.
Okay.
It even ends with a shitty jump scare where the monster jumps at the camera. Hey, come on. The only weird thing about it was there's like a weird old caretaker character in The Descent 2. And like the twist is that he's like throwing people into the cave to feed the monsters. I don't know. It makes no sense. It's really stupid.
That's neat.
It has no purpose in the movie.
Like a caretaker for a Friday the 13th style one?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good. Okay, now I'm going to watch this.
Like an old prospector. You know, don't go down there, you know.
All right, Willie. You good on The Descent?
Yes.
I think I am,
Let's move
too.
On.
We're going to talk a little bit more about Neil Marshall because we are going to... 2005 was a big year for something called the Splat Pack.
Mm,
you remember the Splat Pack?
I do. You're going to have to remind me of specific members, though.
The Splat Pack was a term coined by in the 2000s, I believe around this time, because this is kind of when a lot of them were blown up.
Yeah.
By Total Film critic Alan Jones, that described a group of young horror filmmakers that were coming up around that time. These were guys that were brought up on horror in the 70s and 80s, but their movies, I would say, are much more extreme and gory than a lot of that. The filmmakers grouped in this pack are Alexandre Aja.
Yeah.
Darren Lynn Bousman. Alexandre Aja, I should say, did High Tension in 2003. Then he would go on to do the Hills Have Eyes remake and Mirrors, Piranha.
Yeah.
Horns is his most recent one.
Which I liked quite a bit.
Darren Lynn Bousman,
yep.
who did Saw two, three, four, which were a little bit after when we're talking about, I think, because those were like 2006, I want to say, or maybe they started around this time. But he's also, he's been working a lot lately. He did Repo: The Genetic Opera, which is a better idea, I think, than a movie a lot of times. Mother's Day, 11-11-11, and Abater, which is on Netflix now, and I just watched it, and it's okay.
Okay.
Neil Marshall, Dog Soldiers was his first one in 2002, The Descent, and then I would count Doomsday as a splatter movie.
Yeah.
Maybe not horror, but definitely.
It's got horror elements, though. I mean, you can tell it's from a director who knows horror, you know.
Yep.
At the very least.
Yes. Yeah, there are some callbacks. Eli Roth, who was probably, I want to say in 2005, was probably the big name of this.
Mm-hmm.
Because he had done Cabin Fever, which had gotten the Peter Jackson stamp of approval.
It kind of had that, like, I remember thinking, like, this is a very, like, early Sam Raimi vibe in terms of, like, the it's clearly a guy who's going to move on to bigger and better things.
Yes.
Like, it's a cool early...
He was the one... Yeah, I was going to say, he was kind of the one that everybody was pointing to as, like, the next horror...
Icon.
Like, WizKid. Yeah. But the other person here that would probably, I would argue, was James Wan. Is grouped in here because he had done Saw, Dead Silence, Death Sentence around
yeah,
this time.
Yeah, he certainly had the last laugh, didn't he?
Yep, and he would go on to do The Conjuring, Insidious films. A lot of people group Lee Wan L in this because he's his collaborator a lot of the time. He did Insidious 3 recently, but I think that's the only one he's directed.
Yeah, he was more of a writer.
Insidious 3 is good, too. But
I like Lee Wan L. But...
And the last one we'll talk about a little bit later is Rob Zombie, who had done House of 1,000 Corpses in 2003, Rejects in 2005, Halloween movies, Lords of Salem, and recently 31. So, the only one I missed is Greg McLean they had on here, who did Wolf Creek and Rogue.
Yeah.
He's done a couple movies recently, The Darkness and Belko Experiment. So those are the guys: Aha, Bowsman, Marshall, McLean, Roth, Wan L, Zombie.
Cool. I like that group. For the most part.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about maybe how you felt about horror movies at this time? Maybe if you remember anything of the splatback? Because I remember a little bit. I remember I was into a lot of these movies. These were the movies I think I was probably more drawn to at the time.
Yeah, I think for me, after the slump of post-slasher renaissance, we needed something to kind of bring the genre back to prominence again.
I was like, because it kind of floundered around a little bit. It didn't flounder around, but it never really had a theme running through it.
There wasn't a focus. There wasn't a driving anything. And I think as it would turn out, and this is not a diss to any of the Splatpack, they're very talented guys in that group, but I think we would eventually learn that the Splatpack wasn't, it was kind of a band-aid on a bullet hole for the horror genre. I mean, like, I think it would get us moving in the right direction, but I think along with the Splatpack, you get the unfortunate Porcher Torn moniker. That gets kind of, or Torture Torn. I like that. Torture Torn.
I was going through, I just like correct that, but I'm like, I kind of like that.
Torture Torn's pretty
because
cool.
I don't necessarily like the term torture porn.
I don't either. I don't think it's fair.
I don't think it's fair either.
Because I think a lot of stuff gets lumped into that.
Especially with these movies. Maybe it's these movies I'm thinking of, because I don't think Hostel 2, I don't think it's torture porn at all. I think there's something behind. I think there's at least most of these movies we named off here have something else behind them.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a handful in there that
but there are some.
They're movies about people getting tortured, for sure.
Yeah.
But, you know. But
that's Hollywood.
But I think like a lot of like Ahas movies get thrown in there. I don't think that's fair necessarily.
Me neither.
Like, I don't think High Tension's a torture porn film.
No.
But I think it gets thrown in that category a lot. Mm. Yeah. Anyway, so no, I think what we'd find, like I said, not a diss, but this is a band-aid on a bullet hole in terms of this group of guys wouldn't wind up being the thing that would save horror movies. I don't think we'd get kind of another horror movie renaissance until probably Paranormal Activity.
Yeah,
kind of came around,
especially when it came to wide release stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the Saw movies stayed strong all throughout.
Yeah, you're right.
We had a couple Hostels, but I don't think Hostel stuck around the way people thought it would stick around. Even unfortunately, I think like Alexander Aja, like he kind of fell off a little bit, and I don't know what happened there. It's strange because even Mirrors I liked like a little bit, but I feel like I don't know. He didn't quite. I never felt like he was moving up in terms of the quality of his movies. I always felt like he was kind of slumping. He came back with Horns, though.
Horns is cool.
I like Horns a lot.
Joe Hill novel,
so yeah. I think he might be moving back in the right direction. But I remember being kind of bummed about that. you know, Zombie, you love him or you hate him. You know, Eli Roth, you love him or you hate him.
Eli Roth, the Zombie and Eli Roth, I do want to talk about a little bit.
Sure, go ahead. Yeah, no.
You want me to do it now?
Okay. Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, no, by all means, go ahead.
They seem like two people right now because they are still, you look at someone like James Wan, and James Wan has gone on to do other things.
See, James Wan is the guy, real quick, I'm sorry, but James Wan is the guy I would have expected to not continually move up in terms of quality, especially at the first call. Like, I remember from Saw to Dead Silence, I went, oh, man, you know, that's kind of a bummer.
There are people that love Dead Silence.
Yeah, there's a group of fans, but I'd never been a big fan. I thought it was kind of bad, actually. Visually, it's got some cool stuff.
Yeah.
It's got some creepiness, and it's got the James Wan-ness about it. It's very much a James Wan movie, but it's just not a very good James Wan movie.
Yeah.
You know? Especially looking at the stuff that would come later.
It's so weird. I never got on the James Wan. Like, I liked Saw.
Yeah.
But I was never like, I liked it. I was never like a huge fan, but I had friends that were, but I liked it. But I never get on the James Wan train until Death Sentence, because I loved Death Sentence.
Death Sentence is great.
And there's that scene that like continuous shot on top of the parking garage that is just amazing.
That's incredible.
And that's kind of where I went, oh crap, this guy's got a ton of talent.
There's something more going on here. Yeah, well, and that's the thing is, it's interesting because in the same way that I really thought Ahab was going to be the guy who was like, that's the guy. He's going to be like carrying horror into the new, you know, into the next decade. I don't want it being James Wan,
yes,
who's I kind of slept on a little bit, and I think a lot of people did. So, anyway.
But Roth and Zombie are the two I want to talk about, because I think these are the two guys, their names were in front of everything around that. Like, it was Eli Roth's Hostel, presented by Quentin Tarantino, if I recall.
Yeah,
like,
they had
Tarantino
kind of
and Roth's, like, names above the title.
Zombie was his buddies with Tarantino, too, right? Aren't they kind of?
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah.
And you can see why. They're kind of similar in the way. I mean, they both...
They
all
like
have
the same movies.
They all have vision. They all have their own specific vision, too. But Zombie was hyped so big with House of a Thousand Corpses, and I haven't watched it in a long time, and I'm going to watch it because I got
it. That movie had a lot of hype behind it.
A lot of hype behind it, and I remember being let down by it.
Yeah.
And Rejects, which we'll talk about. But he has his own voice. But it's weird because when I look at their recent movies, I look at Knock Knock and Green Inferno by Roth, and then Lords of Salem and 31 by Zombie, and I like Lords of Salem, but those other ones, they seem kind of bored to me. And I think those two guys have talent. I think Eli Roth, it's maybe visually. I think what you're seeing is people like Carpenter and Romero, and they stayed relevant because they were social filmmaker. Their movies had a lot of social commentary.
Yeah, culturally relevant and stuff.
And they stayed relevant throughout the years, I think.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that Wan and Zombie have that in them a lot of times. I think Rejects does, and we'll talk about that, and I think Hostel 2 does. But I don't think that's their fault either, because people like Craven and Carpenter and them, they came up during that time.
Mm-hmm.
They came up during a different time, and Rob Zombie and Eli Roth, they didn't really, it's just not something they grew up with a lot of the times. But I think when I watch 31 and I watch Knock Knock, Knock Knock is Eli Roth just messing around.
Yeah.
And I wish that they would get something else, kind of like how Raimi did for a little bit there, and then come back to horror. Because even James Wan, horror is kind of like his safe space.
Mm-hmm.
Because he'll come back, like after Fast 7, he came back into The Conjuring 2.
Yeah.
He didn't have a great experience on there. The one that I wish would make more movies is Neil Marshall.
Agree. Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. It's a bummer to see. I mean, like I said, his TV's been great, but I miss feature films from Neil Marshall. One thing I want to say real quick about Eli and Zombie is that I think they're both directors who want to make stuff outside the horror genre.
Mm-hmm.
I know Rob Zombie does.
He's talked about it a lot.
A lot.
I think he's even said the only reason he made 31 is because he could make 31. They weren't going to let him make anything other than
yes.
a horror movie.
And I think the difference, see, I think there's a lot of similarities, but you made a really good comparison to the Carpenter Craven thing, because those guys, I think, also wanted to make movies other than horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at some of Carpenter's stuff, he did try to dabble into more Spielbergian stuff, especially with Starman.
Yeah.
If you look at Craven, he didn't get his chance to do that stuff until later, but look at
Music of the Heart. Yeah.
So they clearly also wanted to. I think the difference there is Craven and Carpenter recognized the fact that we are, for better or worse, we're horror directors now. So we need to find a way to tell the kind of stories we want to tell through the horror, through that microscope, right?
Mm-hmm.
Through the use of that genre, we're going to tell stories we want to tell. Where I think Eli Roth and Rob Zombie stumble is I think they have a harder time finding ways to use horror to tell the kind of stories they want to tell.
Right, and sometimes I'm not even sure with some of their movies what stories they want to tell.
Yeah.
Like, what if they're even trying to say. But, once again, they're visceral filmmakers, both of them.
Yeah.
That's kind of their strength. So yeah. It's hard for me to not. But something like Green Inferno is another one. Green Inferno is a movie by Eli Roth that is just kind of. It's basically shitting on, like, Facebook.
Yeah, it's whatever armchair activists.
Thank you. Thank you. I mean, that's all it is.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny, but at the end of it, you're just kind of like, what's the point? You're just kind of shitting on things. So it's not real exciting to me. I will say this about Greg McLean. I just saw Belko, and Greg McLean is kind of underrated. I don't normally lump him in there with that, but Belko's really good.
Yeah.
That was co-written by James Gunn, and it has both of their sensibilities in it.
Cool. I do want to check it out.
Yeah, so if I were going to pick, I'd say James Wan's my favorite, but we've talked about James Wan a lot on this podcast.
Yeah, I love James Wan.
But other than that,
Marshall.
Marshall's my favorite.
Yeah.
I do like Zombie and Roth, but sometimes I'm not sure why.
Yeah, I don't know why I do as much as you do.
And but. I don't like Alexander Aja, because I don't like High Tension as much as a lot of people.
I like High Tension until the last, like, 10 minutes of High Tension.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way.
It's really kind of cool up until that. But the thing is, like I said, I kind of like Mirrors. I liked Horns.
Yeah, I don't like Mirrors.
Not huge. Piranha's fun.
Piranha's fun. Yep.
What's the other one that I missed?
Oh, Hills Have Eyes remake.
Love the Hills Have Eyes.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
We might have to do that one.
That movie's light years better than the original Hills Have Eyes.
Okay.
I am not afraid to say that. I am unashamed in saying that. Sorry, but it's true.
So, yeah, I think it's an interesting time in horror. And I do think the 2000s are better than the 90s, and I think they're probably more comparable to the 70s than anything else, and I think you can see that influence in a lot of these filmmakers. And I think these guys are a lot of the reason why. I think the 2000s are better than the 90s because of these guys.
Sure. Yeah. I wouldn't disagree with you on that. I really wouldn't. I almost feel like I crapped on them a little bit, which isn't... I wasn't, but, you know.
No, it's okay. Yeah. I got what you're saying, and I think the people did too. Good. We're going to talk about one of these filmmakers right now.
Yeah, which one are we talking about?
We're going to talk about one Mr. Rob Zombie.
Oh, man. Mr. Zombie.
Yes. We're going to talk about Devil's Rejects.
Mm.
The Devil's Rejects, Willie. You remember when this came out? This was his follow-up.
Follow-up to House of a Thousand Corpses. I knew it was kind of a sequel.
Oh, let me do the plot first.
Sort of? Yeah.
The murderous backwoods Firefly family take to the road to escape a vengeful police force, which is not afraid of being as ruthless as their target. That pretty much sums it up.
Yeah, more or less.
Yeah, this was his follow-up to House of a Thousand Corpses, which you and I are thinking in the same boat on that. We were looking forward to it at the time. I like Rob Zombie's music.
Yeah.
I liked a lot of his music videos.
Yeah,
I like
too.
Kind of his. He's got kind of like a Kiss gimmick.
I liked his style.
Yeah. So I was looking forward to it. I don't hate House of a Thousand Corpses. I want to put that out there.
I need to rewatch it. I think the thing is that the hype train was so built up, and I don't know what any of us were really expecting. I'm surprised that we were all surprised it was like an hour and a half long music video, because that's kind of what we should have been looking at.
Right. Remember, it was on the shelf for a while.
Well, and that was the problem. This is early internet. And the big rumor, the rumor mill online was that it was too extreme. No one was gonna put it out there. It was just that extreme. And so naturally, I think as horror fans, we're all like, oh my God. What is Rob Zombie put on film? We need to see this thing. Like, if it's that bad, it's going to be great. And then it kind of came out, and we were like, oh, it wasn't that bad. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It wasn't that extreme. Which, at the time, I was looking for that extreme stuff. You know, that was kind of what I was into.
This and, like, Hostel and stuff like that were kind of the things I was drawn
to. Yeah, like, give me the nasty stuff, you know. And it just didn't quite live up to that, and never was going to.
Yeah.
And that coupled with the zaniness of the editing and the, you know.
It feels like a first movie.
Yeah.
At times.
Sure.
Yep.
Yeah.
By a guy that I think has talent, especially visually, but maybe doesn't know that he doesn't have to use all of that talent.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of kitchen sink stuff going on. Yeah.
Willie, I know where we're going on this. What do you think of The Devil's Rejects?
It's a lot more focused, certainly, than House of Thousand Corpses.
It still can be pretty scattered.
Yeah, it can be. When I saw Devil's Rejects the first time, I wasn't psyched about it, I'll be honest. It was getting pretty solid buzz, but it was kind of like a fool me once kind of thing, you know, where I was like, oh boy, you know. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
But a buddy of mine really, really wanted to see it. Didn't everybody go see it with? I said, okay, I'll go see it with you. He's a huge Rob Zombie fan. Paid for my ticket, so I said, really, what am I going to lose? A couple hours. It'll make my friend happy. So, and I went. And I remember walking out and going, wow, all right. Yeah, that's pretty damn cool. Like, good job, Rob. This time around, I don't know, man. It just doesn't do it for me.
Yeah.
I don't know. I understand the appeal, and I know a lot of people are probably going to be bummed that I'm saying that. It just, this is still his best movie, I think. I'm not going to, you know, which should probably tell you all you need to know about my Rob Zombie opinion.
Yeah, I should jump in real quick and say I'm the Rob Zombie fan of the podcast.
I am not the Rob Zombie fan. I don't hate on the guy necessarily. You know, like he seems like a nice guy. I think he's got talent. I just don't like his movies, you know. They just don't do anything for me. I think my problem with this is here's the issue I have with the movie, and then I'm going to let you talk, because I'd rather somebody that's enjoys this movie talk about it than me,
okay,
you know, crap on it. That's not fair. Every once in a while, and you can tell it when, like, a professional, like, critic reviews a movie sometimes, too, where you can read through that. If you read enough movie reviews, you can read through it, and you go, okay, I see what's going on here. And you can kind of learn to kind of ignore that person. And basically, I'm telling our audience right now to kind of ignore me, because...
Well, unless you don't like this movie, too.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah. I'm not saying, you know, I'm just saying, here's the thing. I don't like this movie because Rob Zombie likes these people that are killing people. Mm-hmm. He likes the Firefly family quite a bit, and I don't.
Right.
Because they're the worst people. But that's kind of the whole point.
And it's a contest in this movie for worst people.
Yes.
There are other people that actually come close to them as being.
Yeah, and well, but here's the problem, and this is where I was going at with that critic thing.
Yeah.
Is that if you don't like the very basis of the point the storyteller is trying to get across, then you're not going to like the movie. And it's no fault of the movies necessarily. It's a fault. It's not your fault either. It's just you don't agree with the director.
Right.
Like, and that's how I feel. I do not see eye to eye with Rob Zombie.
And you don't like spending time with
these people. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't. Especially when there's here's the issue with this one is that it reaches... I'm A-okay with the unexpected. I'm A-okay with being surprised or shocked by a movie that's all right. That's good, actually. It's invited. The issue here is that there's never any comeuppance of any sort. There's never a moment. Just in that logical moment when you think, okay, we're at least going to get a small victory for one of the decent people in this movie, and there's not many of them. There's a few, but there's not many.
Yeah.
We're at least going to get a small victory.
I know what you're talking about.
Something's going to happen. It gets worse for them.
He turns her into roadkill.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You know, like
it is really awful, I will grant you that.
You know, even when you think to yourself, God, these nasty, vile, disgusting human beings have put this group of people through so much stuff. He's just got, at least let this guy get a punch in. Something.
Oh, yeah.
Like, nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. In fact, no, we're going to humiliate, embarrass, and like, torture those people more.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know why. I sit there and I go, why am I watching this?
It is
like, I don't feel good. You know, like, it's not making me feel good. It's not making, it's all it's making me do is feel gross.
Right.
And I don't want to feel gross.
Right.
Like, I'm okay with being grossed out. I don't know. Like, maybe I've just gotten a little older and I'm just like, I just don't have any patience for it.
Mm-hmm.
I see enough shit on the TV every day. I don't really want to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Completely understand.
Didn't work for me this time.
Completely understand.
Totally understand why people like it. Get it. Totally get it. Not knocking any Rob Zombie fans or the man himself. Just doesn't... His movies just don't work for me.
Right.
Yeah. Kind of sad, actually. I'm kind of bummed.
Yeah.
This is the one where I was like, I like that one.
Yeah, I know. That's... I am kind of like... No, I'm not bummed by you now, because whatever. No skin off my back.
Right.
But,
right.
No, I know how you feel with, like, certain directors,
yeah,
where, like, you hold out for, like, man, like, I like that one. And then you realize, like, do I like that one?
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of why I'm worried about revisiting like Hostel 2.
Yeah.
I remember that's the one I point to with Eli Roth where I'm like, yeah, I like that one.
Yeah,
that's the one where I'm like, this guy's got talent.
It's
really
good.
Like it. It's like the one, the other movies I'm kind of like half and half at most on. No. So like we're going to, Hostel 2 is the one I think we decided to do. Of the
when we
movies.
When we do an Eli Roth movie, it'll be hostile. It'll be hostile too.
So yeah. So basically, what I want to say is everything you said, I completely understand. I think you're correct on, and that's exactly why I love this movie.
See, yeah. Which is, you know what's weird about that too to me? What's so interesting about that is you and I have very similar opinions.
This is probably going to be one of the few times we've ever disagreed on.
Yeah.
Movie, I think.
And not argue. I don't think we're going to argue.
No.
Because once again, I get it.
Like, no. Yeah. Willie and I are very simpatico.
Yeah. Yeah.
When it comes to stuff like this. But I think Rob, much like Orson Welles, peaked very early in his career. But like this is his best movie, and it's also his best soundtrack. The soundtrack is awesome, even if you don't like the movie.
The soundtrack is incredible.
It's so good.
And as a musician, I think his choice of music and his choice of where to include certain songs,
yeah, it's really good.
Is top even notch.
Real quick, I want to talk about the ending of Freebird real quick, because I think it's a brilliant use of Freebird. First of all, Freebird has been overplayed, and I get that. But let's not get it twisted here. Freebird is, like, the best song ever.
It's awesome.
Freebird is so cool. And everybody knows the best part of Freebird is the guitar solo at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as they get shot to death, he cuts it off in the middle of the guitar solo. It's basically like, hey, no, you're dead now. You don't get to hear the guitar solo of Freebird anymore.
You're never hearing
this
Freebird
is your hell. Like, this is hell for you. You just get to hear the first part of Freebird. You don't get the payoff. It's hell for the Devil's Rejects. There's their comeuppance. Here's the thing. There's like an artistry to Rob Zombie's movies. There is an artistry to Rob Zombie's movies. He's created his own universe. Even when he's playing with other people's characters, like in the Halloween movies, he's still bringing his own style to them. And he's created his own characters. Now, they're not the most fun people to spend time with. They swear a lot. They don't have the strongest vocabulary.
Jeez, man.
They scream all the time.
Constantly. who does this guy hang out with? Rob Zombie.
His wife, who, when I've seen an interview, seems like a perfectly nice lady.
Very soft-spoken.
Everybody, all the actors are very nice people.
I know. Can I just say one thing, though, real quick?
Yeah,
on the topic of actors.
Yeah.
Sherry Moon's not bad in this.
Sherry Moon's okay.
She's improved over the course of, I think.
When I remember her being bad, it's in Halloween, I think. And I don't think she's very good in that. And I don't think she's good in the other one.
So I just want to say I get the criticism sometimes I think it's not fair to throw that at directors like, oh, you cast your brother or
you cast your wife. Or, yeah.
This one I can see an argument for it. The other thing I want to mention is I get a little frustrated sometimes with Rob Zombie's like cheeky cameos in these movies where it's like Ken Foree works in this movie. But then he's like, oh, I'm going to throw like Brian Posehn in this movie. Diamond Dallas Page and Danny Trejo. Like, I fucking get
this
it.
This doesn't have Chris Hardwick in it, does it? That's House.
No, but that's an example, though. You know what I'm saying? Like that.
It's him going around to horror conventions and going, like, I want you in my movie. And then Ken Foree's like, yes, please.
I mean, Lords of Salem is entirely composed of people from horror conventions.
Right.
Right? I'm not wrong.
I think most of his movies are.
Yeah. That can be a little...
I get
to
that.
Me, that can be a little frustrating sometimes because, I mean, well, I'm so very happy some of these horror icons are getting work. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I'm like, Rob, it just seems lazy to me a little bit.
Yeah. But for the most part, I think they're good.
Yeah. No, they're always fine. I guess I just...
do get to see Sid Haig's balls in this.
That's disgusting. I like Sid Haig, but, man.
Sid Haig.
I see way more of Sid Haig in this movie than I want to. But no, my issue, I guess, with it is that, like, sometimes I feel like instead of casting the best person for the role, he stunt casts a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And I go, well, maybe this person was the best, but maybe they weren't. Maybe you should have done a little more work. I don't know.
No, I get it. I get it. So back to the movie real quick. This is most of his movies I like. I like Lords of Salem, and I like Halloween 2. I don't like Halloween.
You don't like his first Halloween?
I don't like his first Halloween.
Okay.
I don't hate it.
You're not even like a first halfer where you're like...
I'm a first halfer, but it's kind of the same issue I have with 31. You can tell when Rob Zombie gets bored with something, and it's very easy to tell when he gets bored with something, and he gets bored with the second half of Halloween.
Well, yeah, no, once that movie becomes a remake, it's not good.
He gets he is interested in the same stuff he's interested in this movie, which is kind of the characters, the kind of like the forgotten people.
Twisted redneck people.
This is the first half of Halloween, and this one, though, are the only ones that work for me on any sort of intellectual level.
Okay.
Even Lords of Salem is just kind of, it's slow burn. Or it's slow for the first, like, hour, and then it works for me because it comes ridiculous in the last, like, 10 to 20 minutes.
That's almost his giallo movie, right?
Yes.
Is Lords of Salem? That's kind of what he's trying to do, like, make an Italian horror movie almost?
Basically, yep.
I shouldn't say giallo, but, like, an Italian.
Italian horror movie, yeah. And he throws a lot of insane images at the end, so I kind of like it.
Cool.
But
I haven't actually seen it, so.
I'm never going to watch it again.
Okay.
I'll say that, but I enjoyed it when I watched it. But these are kind of, yeah, I mean, these are the forgotten people. They're emotionally disturbed in a lot of cases, particularly the main characters. But these are also the people that you don't see a lot of in Hollywood movies. And if you do see a lot of them, it's Hollywood writers or Harvard writers, like writers on The Simpsons or like SNL characters throughout the years. They're being made fun of for the most part. And I do appreciate that he looks at these people with sometimes a sympathetic or empathetic eye. It's funny to me who the Firefly clan attacks in this movie, because it seems to be their attack. This is the interesting part of the movie to me. They're not striking back against the rich or the elites.
No.
They're essentially, and it makes sense because they're killing the only people they can find. But they're people that are kind of on the same social ladder.
I think
that's really interesting because it's them attacking people the same station of life. It's almost like the lower middle class eating themselves.
Yeah.
For a lot of it. The second half of the movie, though, is where it gets very uncomfortable. And it also gets interesting to me.
Are we talking about once it gets to the hotel?
Once it gets to the hotel. And then it actually gets more uncomfortable for me after the hotel scene, because that's where it becomes Rob Zombie's Nightbreed. And he starts like fleshing out these characters, and you start seeing like home movies of them. And they do things like go for ice cream
together. Yeah.
Yeah. And like they go on a family road trip to Ken Forey's like pleasure palace. Oh my God. If that was,
holy smokes. Ken Forey needs to like get on that.
Right.
Ken Forey's pleasure palace. Dude, it's just like a resort, like a nice day spa that you can go to. God, that thing sells itself. Anyway.
So it's during that time when he humanizes them. That's when it gets more uncomfortable for me.
I agree. Yeah.
And that's also, I mean, like he's, the one part that he goes out of his way too. A lot of the fun in them, a lot of the times, isn't killing the people. It's torturing them and bringing them down to their level and just having fun and toying with them. And they essentially dehumanize him, and he dehumanizes everybody else while he's humanizing the serial killers. And that's a crazy choice.
Yeah, the police.
Because it's not like Nightbreed where there's a separation between, because it's a fantastic monster you're looking at. These are actual human beings that are serial killers. And there are part of me that goes, it's exhilarating to watch because you never know what's going to happen. And there are part of me that thinks it's really interesting. Part of me thinks it's awful. Like, come on now. And I mean, you have to humanize people because they're human beings. And I think that's an interesting point for the movie to make, is we're capable of all these things, but we're also capable of what these people are doing too. But it's a really bleak outlook.
Yeah, it is.
On things.
That might be my issue. Is it's so bleak.
It's so bleak because, going back to the dehumanizing thing, he turns, the one woman escapes, and he immediately runs her over with a truck.
Yeah.
And they're like scraping her. Like they show.
Yeah,
her.
They show like close ups of. And what's left of her.
They reduce the one woman who got away from them to just a dead animal on the road.
Yeah.
And you go, and I can see where people go, this is a little bit much.
Who's wearing her husband's face? I mean, it's a lot. I don't know.
No, it is a lot. I also think, while this is, and I'll be quick here, while this is Zombie's best movie, it has its flaws.
Sure.
But they're flaws in the Rob Zombie sense. Like, they're flaws that only Rob Zombie movies could have. Like, there's the scene with the critic. I've only watched the unrated version of this movie. I should throw that out there, so I don't know what the theatrical's like. But there's a scene with the critic where he goes on this Groucho Marx tangent, and you could tell it's only because Rob Zombie really likes Groucho Marx.
That's so much a Tarantino moment where I go, whoa.
And Rob Zombie's not Tarantino. There's also, like, the part where Tiny goes to the guy who keeps talking about having sex with a chicken. And it goes on what seems like for like 20 minutes.
Oh my God, yeah.
And I was sitting there like, come on now. So there are a lot of parts. It's a very rambling script, but it rambles in these weird Rob Zombie ways where I just go, yeah, I kind of forgive it for that. We touched on this a little bit. I think he's incredibly talented visually. I think his storytelling could always use some work. I think he could use an editor in a lot of ways. But I also think it would help if he went and did. He's always talked about doing a Groucho Marx movie.
That and a baseball movie, too, right?
Philadelphia Flyers, a hockey movie.
A hockey Broad movie, Street, that's right. Bullies. That's right.
And I would love to see him do that.
Yeah.
I would love to see him do both those. Because the Groucho Marx movie is kind of about Groucho Marx in his old age.
Mm.
And, like, the person that lived with him as he was that's in his final years.
Fascinating to me.
And I think he would. I think he'd do really well with that.
I have no idea how he'd do, but I'd watch the shit out of it.
And I think, kind of like Raimi, if he came back to the horror genre, they're similar. They're not the same, though. Raimi's a better filmmaker. But they do have their similarities in a visual sense, where Raimi, when he was younger, was for the most part a visual filmmaker, and I think Zombie was too. And I think if he came back to it, I think he could make something special again. But
yeah,
we'll see. You good with the Devil's Rejects?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay,
I'm good. Absolutely.
All right, we got a little bit of time left, Willie. We're gonna jump back into the time machine.
Oh,
we're gonna head to 2017.
Whoa.
We'll go through this quick because I want to run through some movies that have come out this year. We're about a quarter of the way through the year.
You're gonna have to cover. I haven't been very good about seeing movies.
There's one I wanted you to talk about though, in particular.
Okay.
Willie, talk about King Kong real quick because you saw it and
Kong.
I didn't. Yeah.
Kong Skull Island. I had a lot of fun with it.
Okay.
Yeah. They're doing the whole setup, the big giant like kaiju monster movie universe thing.
Okay.
You know, doing one of those like shared universe things that everybody's trying to do. This one works for me because it's just Godzilla and King Kong. Like, it's not that complicated. And I'm a big Godzilla fan, like a huge fan. I think arguably there's only really one Godzilla horror movie, straight horror movie, and that's probably the original. But he's a big monster, and you know, there's something scary about giant monsters, right? It's a lot of fun. I like this movie. Is it as classy as Peter Jackson's King Kong? No. Is it a lot more fun than Peter Jackson's King Kong? Yeah.
This is also clocks in under 2 hours, doesn't it?
It sure does.
What a hero.
It sure does.
Jordan Roberts?
Jordan Volk Roberts. Yeah. I believe it clocks in at like an hour 45, which is a nice...
Oh, he lives around here in Michigan, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Isn't he from Michigan? I want to drive to his house and give him a hug.
Just a big hug.
Getting a blockbuster under 2 hours.
Yep. Yeah, congratulations.
Please teach anybody else in Hollywood this lesson.
Yeah, it can be done. No, it was a lot of fun. I mean, yeah, is it goofy and campy sometimes? Totally. But that's kind of what I wanted from it. I wanted some fun, goofy camp. Didn't want it to take itself too seriously. I wanted it to have, you know, to have a little more of a... If it's going to exist alongside... If we're building to a Godzilla versus King Kong... Let's not overthink it. Let's not over-dramatize it. Let's have some fun with it. And King Kong has a lot of fun. He smashes the shit out of these things called skull crawlers.
Okay.
Pretty cool creatures. Yeah, they're called skull crawlers. And it's great because he has to fight some of the smaller skull crawlers before he gets to the boss skull crawler. Like, there's a big boss one. It's like an old Nintendo game where you just fight a bigger version of whatever you already fought. Yeah.
Sweet.
With some different colors. And they were like, that's the boss. Yeah, pretty good stuff.
Cool.
Yeah, worth checking out.
Cool. I'm going to rattle off some that I've watched in the first quarter. Four movies I haven't watched that I feel as if I need to say will probably... I need to see before the end of the year. Raw.
Okay.
Which I've heard really good things about. A Cure for Wellness, which I was pretty interested in. That's the Gore Verbinski movie. I kind of want to see Rings. I do want to see Colossal. I think that kind of came after April, so I'm not putting that. And, of course, The Bye Bye Man. So those are movies that I have not seen yet. Here's some movies that I have seen that I wanted to rattle off real quick for you, rapid fire style.
All right, let's do it.
Split, you and I both saw this.
Oh, loved it.
Two in a row for M. Night, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, I liked it too.
On a roll, on a tear.
Get Out. We have talked about Get Out.
Oh, love Get Out.
Get Out is probably going to end up being the best horror movie of the year, or at least the most talked about and probably the most representative.
Right now, it's my favorite of the year.
I don't think an Oscar nomination is out of the question.
It shouldn't be.
Yep. XX. XX is the all-female horror anthology. Roxanne Benjamin, Kara Kusama, who The Imitation We Loved. St. Vincent, who is recording artist. And Jovanka Vukovic. It's an anthology film. Four stories. It's fun.
Sweet.
I have kind of completely forgotten about it.
Okay.
But while you're watching it, it's an enjoyable.
So it's worth a look. It's not going to necessarily linger with you, but it's a fun watch.
It's like a lot of anthology movies that have come out recently where it's not one of... Anthology movies are tough anyway.
Yeah.
This isn't one of the all-time greats. I don't recall... I don't think it has a wraparound. It's just four stories.
Okay.
The stories are all good.
Sure.
None of them blew me away, though.
Okay.
The Void. The Void just came out. Well, you should check out The Void.
Yeah, where can you watch that?
Right now it's on iTunes.
All
right. I think it will be on DVD, Blu-ray shortly.
Mm.
It was one of those early iTunes releases. It's like it's Carpenter, Clive Barker, Fulci, Lovecraft, and you like throw it all in a blender and you get this.
Wow.
It's got some really cool practical effects too.
Okay.
Check it out. I'm interested in your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I'll check it out.
Sure. The Black Coat's Daughter. Directed by Oz Perkins.
I was curious about this one.
This is... Did you watch The Pretty Thing That Lives in the House or the Netflix movie?
No.
I can't remember the exact title of it.
I'm the Pretty Thing That Lives in the House.
I'm the Pretty Thing That very much like that. Okay. He's Anthony Perkins' son, Tony Perkins.
Really?
This is his son, yep.
No shit.
Yep. It's slow burn is a word that's thrown around. Like festival horror is what this is. It's kind of like... It was called February. It played around the same time as The Witch and then The Devil's Candy, which I'll talk about a little bit
later.
It has a little more in common with The Witch. It's very, very slow, though, and it's one of those movies where I wasn't really into it, and then it ended, and I went, oh, I kind of like that.
Okay. I get that, yeah.
Yeah, but it's very, very slow moving. It's an acquired taste.
Okay.
Prevenge. Prevenge is a Shudder. It's on Shudder, I think it's an exclusive on there. It's a horror comedy. It's about a woman's unborn child who is, like, telling her to kill people. It's funny.
It's Monkey Shines the Unborn Baby.
It's not, I didn't think it was great, but I did think it was funny. I had fun with it. And okay. It's kind of quick. The Girl with All the Gifts.
Yeah, how was that? I was actually really interested in that.
I thought it was okay.
Okay.
I would like you to watch it.
Okay.
Because I would like, this is one of those other ones where I like to hear your opinion on it. I watched it and went, oh, this would probably be a pretty good novel. And then I read that it's
not. Which it is.
It's a novel. Then I read it's not a very good novel either.
Okay.
It didn't do much for me.
Okay.
Belko Experiment. This is the one I think we kind of slept on as horror fans. I think it opened like weeks after Get Out.
Yeah.
And much like Get Out, it has a
lot.
And
Split.
Yes. Yeah, I think people were kind of burned out. And especially a movie like this, because it deals with similar subject matter to Get Out, I'll say, in terms of social commentary, social classes.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very dark, and it's very, very bleak. It was presented, even on the poster, I think it said, The Office, or Office Bates meets Battle Royale. Mm. It's not funny at all. Which is
really
weird, because it's James Gunn, and it's got
the trailer has some funniness to it.
It's, the funny stuff in it is really, really dark, and then Sean Gunn's kind of funny in it.
Okay.
But it's not a comedy. They're like most of the funny. It's like dark humor.
It's just a lot of murders.
It reminded me a lot in tone of Day of the Dead.
Holy smokes!
Where it just hammers you.
Unrelentingly bleak.
Yes. Yeah. That was kind of the movie that was popping through my head all the time.
Whoa.
I'm not sure if it's because of Dawn of the Dead, the James Gunn connection.
Whoa.
But that was kind of what I was thinking the whole time.
Okay, what's the best death in the movie? You don't have to say who it is, because that's probably a spoiler, but do you remember, is there a particularly good person getting offed moment? I imagine something happens in an elevator at some point, right?
Yeah, I remember the elevator. There is a sequence of, yeah, that's where I don't want to, there's an explosion sequence, I'll say that.
Okay.
I wish it stuck the landing, though, too. That was where.
Ooh, okay.
That was where I kind of. But that was also kind of like the Dawn of the Dead thing. Because Dawn of the Dead, or Day of the Dead, is not a perfect film for me.
No.
I really like it.
No.
But it's not perfect for me, but that's kind of why I like it.
Yeah.
Last movie I want to talk about, because this is one I want you to see. This is one, like, I'm really, like I'm pushing for you to see. It's called Devil's Candy.
Devil's Candy, okay.
This is Ethan Embry. He plays like an aging metalhead.
I like both those things, Ethan Embry and aging metalheads.
And he's also an artist. I don't want to give anything away about this, but it's basically his family. He and his family moved. He's like a struggling artist. He and his family moved to a house in Texas. And they start, there are strange goings on in the house.
Sure.
That sounds pretty generic.
Okay.
This movie's not generic.
Okay.
This movie is really cool.
Devil's Candy.
It's okay. The best possible.
Did you watch this on iTunes too, then?
This is also an iTunes one. This one will also, I think, be out soon. This feels like one that'll be on Netflix pretty soon too.
Yeah, I usually watch my, see the tricky thing is I watch my stuff either on Netflix or on Amazon.
Right.
You know.
This, yeah.
I don't really know how iTunes works for movies, I'll be honest. I never used it.
Same sort of thing as Amazon. It might even be on Amazon. It's just a couple bucks more.
How do you do it on your TV, though?
Oh, as far as iTunes? Yeah, that's a good point, because I have Apple TV.
See, I don't.
Yep.
So I can't do it.
Yeah, the only other way you could do it is hook up your computer through that.
Yeah.
Or your phone or something.
But it's probably on Amazon to rent, I'm sure.
I think it's probably on Amazon VOD. Yeah. Yep. All right. Back in the time machine, we're 2005. Let's get to the end of this bad boy.
Let's do it. How long are we running right now?
We're about an hour and 20 minutes.
Okay.
We'll fly through this one, I think. This is the exorcism of one Miss Emily Rose.
It is.
A lawyer takes on a negligent homicide case involving a priest who performed... that's where it cuts off. I guess I have to click on the IMDb page.
Ooh.
Real professional. Who performed an exorcism on a young girl.
Yes.
I guess I probably could have finished that.
You could have, yeah.
By
totally.
Thinking. Willie, I think we talked a little bit. But by 2005... You and I were more into the splatterfests that we've talked about a little bit.
Yeah, and this is pretty far removed from that.
I watched this like a year or two later, probably on like Showtime Extreme.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you think of it this time?
I remember the time being really bored with it and just going, yeah. What? This is not good.
That's kind of where I was going to. Like, I remember like being like, this is boring.
This is lame. Yeah. But then I remember going into it now. This time, I was like, well, maybe how much attention was I paying to this? Because I'm like, I was in love with the Splat Pack. You know, like that's the stuff I was watching. So was I really giving this like the benefit of the doubt? How much was I actually watching this and actively like participating in the film? I will say that this time around, I was really hoping I was gonna like love this movie. I don't love it.
Yeah.
I don't even like it that much. I'll be honest. And
let's.
Here's the thing.
You like Scott Derrickson?
I do.
I do. Too.
I do. You know what's funny is that, like I don't. You know what's hilarious about Scott Derrickson is I don't like any of his movies except for Doctor Strange.
You know what? I will say this. He directed the one later Hellraiser sequel I like.
Yeah, that's like one of the that is one like one of the only decent Hellraiser sequels. I don't really like it that much still.
Yeah,
but it's better than like almost all the rest. It's funny. I just like, when I look back on Scott Derrickson's like filmography, I'm like, I didn't really like much of it.
Yeah,
but I really like the guy.
I like the guy too, and I like aspects of his. I like aspects of this movie.
That's the thing is, I like it. I like enough of most of his movies to where I'm like, I know this guy's. He's special. There's something
I really
about
like
this
Doctor
guy.
Strange too. I'll throw that out.
Yeah, it's Doctor Strange is great. But you know, like yeah, there's moments in really all of his movies, so it's weird. It's like I feel like I probably shouldn't like him very much, but I can't help but like him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just because he feels like I'm watching him grow before my eyes. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
As a director, didn't expect him to get that gig so quickly. I mean, not, he's been around a long time. I should say I didn't expect him to leap from, like, Deliver Us from Evil or Sinister.
Deliver Us from Evil, yeah.
Yeah, to Doctor Strange. That's a shocker. But I felt his natural progression as a director through the course of his career. And
when you follow him, like, I follow him on Twitter and I've read interviews with him,
mm-hmm.
I can see the way he talks. Doctor Strange is a good fit for him. His interests and everything line up.
You know, this one, the interesting thing about this one is I feel like this way with a lot of Scott Derrickson's movies is like the concept behind it is such a great. Like, this is an easy movie to sell. I feel like you're like you've never seen a horror movie like this. Like this is one part Exorcist and one part like A Time to Kill.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is gonna be, and I think people would be like, wow, that's unique enough. That's made like that's give you a little budget and go out and make it. The thing is like that concept is great. Like a horror movie or this like a horror story told almost entirely during the aftermath of the horror, you know, about like what, like we never, like think about like all the horror movies you've seen where like the movie ends with like a trail of bodies and there's like one or two survivors, right? Mm-hmm. And but you never see what happens next.
Yeah.
Like you never they never like, you always wonder like, man, they're probably going to go to jail for a little bit.
Then you never see, or like you never see the guys from The Exorcist on trial.
No.
Which you could, I mean, you could feasibly say like maybe we should look, investigate this a little further.
Look into it at least.
No, I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, you never see, like, I'm trying to think of an example. Like, okay, House on Haunted Hill, the remake, right? Big fan of that movie.
Me too.
So they all clearly are invited to this house to party, and then all of them except for like two of them die, right? They survived. They made it out. But what are they going to tell everybody when they get back? But this is most movies. Yeah. Like what do you tell everybody? How does that work? You're going to get arrested. Like there's going to be red tape. Mm-hmm. Okay. This movie examines what that red tape is.
Yeah.
The issue with this movie is, like I said, 50% horror movie, 50% legal movie or courtroom drama, and it doesn't do either of them badly. It just doesn't do either of them particularly great either. They're both elements are, because there's so much shared time between both of the aspects of this movie, they're both kind of vanilla.
I wanted to say this feels like, we talked about this as everybody's second movie. This feels like the second movie of a guy who would continue to grow and get better as a filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
But a guy who, like, his second movie is a big budget studio movie, kind of. I mean, this is a studio movie.
Yeah.
And it feels like a second movie where the studio does not want to take a stand either way. They want to, like, they want to hit this thing right down the middle.
They do.
It feels like they're holding maybe the director, maybe the writer, maybe the movie just back in a lot of ways.
Yeah, they're not fully willing to commit to either side.
Nope.
Yeah. They don't want to go head first into the legal stuff.
Nope.
And I can understand that because, you know, like I said, in concept, I can see how this could be a pretty easy sell in terms of like this is going to be a unique horror movie. No one's seen a horror movie like this before.
Well, and part of the reason I wanted to do this, a movie, is because, well, there was two reasons for this. One is I wanted to revisit a movie that you and I didn't like.
We both
talked about this, and we both wanted to revisit a movie that
we weren't nuts about, we didn't
like at the time.
Yeah.
The other reason is, it's 2005. The subject matter in this movie with religion and science, like the intersection of religion, science, and the law all in one, is perfect timing for this year.
It really is.
And it never gets to any of that, really.
No, it's too bad.
The biggest bummer, and I think what sinks the movie is, so the two main characters, Laura Linney and Tom Wilkinson.
Both great actors.
Both
solid gets for this movie.
Solid gets and good performances, too. Yeah. Jennifer Carpenter's really good, too.
Yeah, she's really good. She's all bendy and shit.
The main flaw in this movie, and what I think hurts it in that area overall, is, so Laura Linney's character starts off, and she says, flat out, I'm an agnostic.
Mm-hmm.
So she hasn't really taken a stand when it comes to religion,
sure,
or faith. So she's kind of a floating middle ground character in that. So she goes through all this stuff. She sees all this stuff. She listens to everybody's stories. And then at the end of the movie, like, she's a little bit less agnostic, from what I gathered. she's more inclined, more slanted towards faith.
What's so weird about that?
There is, like, no journey for her.
Is that's borderline a betrayal of the entire movie.
I know.
Because the entire point of the Emily Rose character is that, like, Tom Wilkinson's character eventually says, like, I believe she'll be a saint, recognizes a saint one day, because she sacrifices her life to prove the existence of demons.
Yeah.
To expose demons to the world. And there's, like, dark forces kind of fighting back against Laura Linney in this movie. They're mostly just, like,
That part's really goofy.
Being scary to her and stuff. Like, they're, like, blowing a breeze through her house. I don't know. It's,
yeah.
They're not doing a lot.
Doesn't a car almost hit her?
Uh-oh. I've seen that happen numerous times. Doesn't mean a demon's involved. But the thing is, like her not... I'm not saying at the end she should have, like, been like, hallelujah, I'm saved or anything. But, like, maybe, like, end it with her, like, going into church on Sunday morning. Like, maybe, like, okay, like I'm willing to, like, there's clearly more out there. I'm willing to, like, you know.
Right. That's always like when, this is a weird tangent, but in X-Men, the comics, where is it Colossus is an atheist?
I believe so.
And I sit there and go, how are you an atheist in this? Because you have literally seen heaven and hell in your travels. It does not make any sense. So, like,
that is true.
You have literally seen gods and demons. But no, I don't want to rewrite the movie or anything, but starting off as an agnostic is just like emblematic of the movie because it doesn't want to take a stand either way. Starting off as an atheist, and then by the end of the movie, maybe she's agnostic, and you've at least gone through a little bit more character development than what happened. It's just so weird. I don't have much else to say. I do want to talk a little bit about the actual story real quick.
No, go ahead. I want to hear about it.
Because the actual story is horrifying.
Yeah.
It's based on a... it's loosely based, I should say, on the story of a 23-year-old woman from Germany, Annelise Michel. This was in 1976. At the time, many believed that Annelise was possessed by 6 demonic spirits.
Oh, boy.
They narrowed it down to 6.
It's like a house party.
Well, you want to know some of them? Let me find out.
Oh, they have bios.
No, they... one of them was Hitler.
Oh,
she was possessed by they believe she was possessed by Hitler. Maybe I didn't write. Oh, no, excuse me. Here they are. The priest identified several demons, including Lucifer, Judas, Nero, brother Nero, Cain, and Adolf Hitler were 5 of them.
What a crew.
Yeah, who spoke. That's, if you're going to pick like a group of people you don't want to be.
That's the guys.
I would think even just...
Yeah, are they missing anybody?
I think
so.
Being possessed by one of those would be an
It's
issue.
Bad enough.
Lucifer seems like the capper. Why is Lucifer even bringing the rest of these people?
He doesn't need them.
So,
shouldn't he be torturing those people?
Do your job. Yeah, he's buddied up with them. They're like Lucifer's Avengers.
Yeah, he's doing a shitty job, man.
God. So I like that we're joking around. This is about to get awful. Don't worry.
Okay.
So the German girl. So after enduring 67 rites of exorcism over 9 months, she succumbed to starvation.
Ugh.
She would force herself to fast, believing that would cleanse her body of the demons. When she died, she weighed around 68 pounds.
Oh God.
Yeah. Her parents and 2 priests were actually put on trial and found guilty of negligent homicide and sentenced to 6 months in prison and 3 years probation.
I mean,
The Telegraph in the UK did an interview. I found out about the... It was around the time the movie was released in 2005.
Okay.
They did an interview with the mother. The dad is passed on. I don't think the priests are talking. She goes, I don't want to see the film, and I don't know anything about it. I like that they asked her. You go and check out the flick.
You going out this weekend to check it out? Ready to relive that nightmare? Remember how you watched your daughter waste away?
Going on a date night?
Yeah, what the hell?
But she said, she goes, I know we did the right thing because I saw the sign of Christ in her hands. And that was something the movie touched on to a little bit with the stigmata.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
But the article goes in a little bit more in depth on her. In 1968, around the age of 17, she began to suffer convulsions. She was initially diagnosed with grand mal epilepsy, which they touch on.
They go into in this. Yep.
She started experiencing devilish hallucinations while praying. By 1973, she was suffering severe depression and considering suicide. The voices in her head told her she was damned. Well, of course they did. Look at the voices. She asked the local priest for exorcism and was twice refused. It was her third request for exorcism that was granted. Her mom once again said, I don't regret it. There was no other way. So in the end, to me, the story, there was actually a movie called Requiem. That came out in 2006 that is also based on that story.
Oh.
And it seems to touch on more of the stuff I was interested in, which is the story sounds like, even if you're a religious person, it sounds like this woman needed more help than what she got, more medical help, and she suffered for it.
I think solely relying on
one thing.
Yeah, yeah. I think foregoing the actual physical needs of a human being, it killed her.
Yeah, me too.
It's very sad. I'm not condemning anybody. But
no, me either, but they should have served some time.
Yeah.
I'm okay with
that. Give this girl a feeding tube or something.
Yeah, jeez. I kind of want to track down that other movie, that German movie, Requiem.
Yeah.
Because it seems that is the stuff in the story that I'm more interested in.
I think there's an interesting story here. I just don't think that they didn't pick the parts that I found all that interesting.
But I also see why a major studio is going to be like, we're not going to tell that story.
No.
This is an exorcism.
Yeah. Yep.
So that's it.
All right.
We'll end it on a high note.
2005. What a year.
These were It was kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
It was kind of a downer.
No, it's all right.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting that this is the weakest. To me, this has the weakest offering in terms of the years we've talked about.
Yeah.
I'd say
yeah, this is the year that you were...
There are a couple I did. I legitimately just wasn't a fan of.
What's weird is I think if... What I would like to do when we're done with the 2000s is put together like a top 10 list of the movies we talked about.
Yeah.
And I can see two of these movies making it for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, interesting.
But I think it's interesting. Two out of the three you weren't crazy about. So.
I do not regret watching any of these, though. Or rewatching all of them, I should say.
Me either.
No, it was enjoyable still. Even though I wasn't nuts about a couple of them, it was enjoyable.
Yeah.
Should we let the listeners know? I guess we should maybe first let them know where they can get a hold of us.
Yeah, good point. Get us on Twitter at HM Yearbook. Hit us up on Facebook at Horror Movie Yearbook. HorrorMovieYearbook@gmail.com is where you can reach us through email. I'm not going to give you my address, so you can't send me snail mail. you can leave us a review on iTunes. Probably leave us a review on Stitcher. I don't know. I never use Stitcher. No, sure. Reviews on there. Review us wherever you want.
Mm-hmm.
Write us in about your 21st birthdays.
Yeah.
Listen to the Game Nerds, Midwest Game Nerds podcast. They will be talking about video games.
Oh, yeah.
The newest and
greatest.
Latest and greatest. They've been talking about Zelda. What were they talking about this week? Something good.
I was back on Video Game Terror for a while, and God, I've fallen off again.
I'm playing Zelda right now, still. I'm going to be playing Zelda for the next couple months.
Yeah, you make it last.
It's so good.
Oh, good. Good.
And they're coming out. Oh my God! Switch at some point is on their virtual console is going to be releasing Splatterhouse.
I love Splatterhouse.
Yeah,
I had the original cartridge.
So, let's tell the folks. Do you want to pick a year now?
Well, here's the thing. So we've talked about our next episode, and we're not doing a traditional episode.
No.
We hope that doesn't disappoint, but we actually have a local horror convention is coming up here shortly. A couple weekends, or I should say weekend after this week.
Yes.
Next weekend. And it's gotten bigger year to year. I think this is the biggest year they've had yet. It's starting to become a pretty decent sized horror convention at this point.
Yeah.
And
we've gone the last couple years.
Right? Had a lot of fun. We're going to go this year and we're going to kind of report back and talk about our horror convention experience and
past experiences as well.
Yeah. And just have some fun with it.
Yep.
Little non-traditional, we know, but it'll be a nice experience for us. Since we'll be spending a lot of our weekend there at the horror convention, it'll be easier for us to do that as well, just practically, than to do three movies on top of it.
And also, write in and let us know some of your experiences as well.
Yeah, let's hear some horror convention experiences. People you've met, things you've seen, oddball things here and there. I'm not opposed to throwing a year out there. We could.
Let's throw a year out there. So that way we can
give
the listeners a little bit of time because we'll have a couple weeks in between.
Yeah, this will give you guys a lot more time than even usual.
And plus, I like reading off the years.
It's actually become part of the fun of the episode. So let's see.
And we've only got an hour and 45 minutes. Let's make it longer.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. You know what? We haven't... Oh, man. I haven't even picked a decade yet. Not the 90s. I guess we're going to go back to the 70s again. You know what? God, here I am sitting and I'm having a hard time. I'm like messing around on my phone trying to find a good year. You know what, Tim? Let's do that. Let's go crazy. We're either going to do 70s or 80s.
Okay.
Can you just do 1970 through
1980?
1989.
On the old random number generator?
Yeah. And if it's a year we've already done, we'll just click it again and...
All right.
We're going to go totally random this time.
1970 to 1989.
We've done 1989,
right?
I don't remember.
We are.
We've had enough episodes now to where...
True professionals here.
I legitimately don't remember.
I don't think we have done
We've done 88.
We have not done 1989. And you know why? Because there's one bad boy out here we're doing.
You know what? We just did 88 and 90. Should we do 89 right now? And 87. That's funny. You know what? Screw it. Let's do it.
Let's do it. I really want to do it.
All right.
Because, oh my God.
89.
This is quite a year.
All right. Let's hear some of these movies.
Pet Sematary.
Oh boy.
Clown House.
I love it.
Here's the one that caught my eye.
Uh-oh.
Shocker. A Nightmare on Elm Street.
I almost put my drink out.
Five.
I was like, wait a second. What?
Cutting Class with Brad Pitt. Friday the 13th Part 8, which we've already done.
Yeah.
Tetsuo the Iron Man. Might be a fun one to revisit. Society. Oh, I think Society is on Shudder, so.
Whew.
Amityville 4, Halloween 5, Leviathan.
Oh, that may be fun.
Howling 5, House 3.
Which one's Howling 5?
Howling 5 is The Rebirth.
God, I don't remember if that's the one I like or not.
The horror show, yeah. Psycho Cop. Is that... No, that's Psycho Cop. It's not Maniac Cop. Oh, you know what? I kind of want to do Intruder. Have you seen Intruder?
It's been a long time.
I want to do Intruder.
Okay.
Beware Children at Play. I think that's a trauma movie.
Mm.
Sleepaway Camp 3, After Midnight, The Church, a Dr. Caligari, a Warlock.
Oh, boy. With Julian Sands?
I think those are the big ones.
Okay. All right.
You got any favorites there?
Oh, boy. Pet Sematary is pretty good. I'm a fan. Well, a couple after that.
Well, I kind of want to do Intruder.
I'm down with Intruder.
And I kind of want to do Shocker.
What else was in that first couple?
Clown House, Cutting Class, Tetsuo, and Society were the two I was kind of throwing around as my weird ones.
Intruder and Shocker. All right. Okay. Well, we won't finalize what we're doing just yet.
But we're leaning towards Pet Sematary and Intruder for sure, right?
Yeah, and probably Shocker. You fucker. Sick twisted. No wonder you like Rob Zombie movies. You're twisted. You do like to watch people get tortured, don't you?
I'm totally going to. Boy, Willie's really going to be bummed out when we do Shocker and a Rob Zombie movie back to back. But
yeah, you're breaking my soul, my spirit here.
Oh, God. Let's get out of here, Willie.
All right.
It's been an hour and 45 minutes.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Say bye-bye, man and woman.